are listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio. You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza. Alan Cardoza. Only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Answers for the Family. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza. Every Monday from 11 a.m. to noon Pacific Standard Time, my guest and I will bring you answers and options to raising children today and in our constantly changing future. Our topic today is teens talk about hope and recovery. But before we get to them, I want to let you know I'm thankful to have as my co-host again, former radio personality who has worked for stations from Mississippi to California, Melody Fox, who now goes by Dr. Melody Fox, as she is a California licensed psychologist and marriage and family therapist. Melody currently has a private practice in Newport Beach, California, while she works with adults and their relationships, as well as teens and their families. Melody, how was your weekend?
Oh, it was a great weekend. I got to deal with a lot of plumbers and bursting pipes. It was fun. I'm so glad to be here. It's Monday.
Well, now, am I the only one that can hear us feeding back into our mic, into our headphones?
I can hear a little bit here and there.
Okay. Well, we're going to have quite an interesting day today, or I should say at least morning. We're going to have a chance to talk with some teens that are in a program. And they're going to talk to us very candidly, and I've had a chance to talk to some of them, not the same ones, but I've sat in, they're in a conference room, and I was just so I don't even know if amazed is the right word, but I felt so good about how open and honest that they were to be able to just talk about kind of what got them in the position they're in, and how beautiful things are now as they're coming out of it.
Mm-hmm. I think it's a great opportunity to find out from the kids, from the teenagers, exactly what got them there, what brought them out, and what works for them, and what doesn't. So what a great opportunity that we have.
Right, yeah, and I'm truly thankful for that. And for those listening, for those parents out there that are listening, or those professionals, I think this is going to be a great opportunity, I mean, for you to go ahead and listen live, but afterwards, think about a time in which you can sit down with your teenager and talk with them, and then have them listen to the show and have them really listen to what the kids are saying. Because I think we all know that once somebody becomes a teenager, they are of the belief that a giant needle has come down and sucked half our brain out as parents. So we don't have all the answers anymore. But I think that they're going to listen to these kids.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let me bring them on. Before I do that, let me bring on a returning guest, which is Davey Chandler. Davey is a clinical director of Sunhawk Recovery and a licensed clinical social worker who's been working in the mental health field for 25 years, primarily working with children and adolescents. In addition, Davey's been an instructor at one of Utah's finest state universities for about 15 years. Now, Davey's been on the show before, and we just had a great time. Great guy. He had his wife with him at that time, and unfortunately, I think she's not going to be able to be on this time, but I know that Davey says that much of his strength comes from the fact that he's married to the most incredible woman on the planet. So I think that's going to tell you a little bit about Davey right there, although this time around, Davey, I think I have a little problem with that. Because I know that.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, because I'm in love with the most incredible woman on the planet, and she's here in Southern California. So you seem to have, you have your most incredible one.
Better talk about my wife, huh?
In Utah, yeah. So, but see, I'm thinking that you're talking about the love of my life. So maybe we're just going to have to agree that we're both very, very fortunate to have who we have in our life.
We'll go with that.
All right. Now, Davey has with him in the room our special guests today, and they are adolescents that are enrolled at Sunhawk Recovery. They're all going to be using their first name in the interest of confidentiality. So we have with us Selena, who's been in the program for 6 months, John, who has been there for 7 months, Alex, who's been there for 5 months, and Kelsa, who's been there for 2 months. To all of you, welcome to Answers for the Family.
We're going to change that just a little bit, Alan. We've got Mark taking the place of John, and Kelsa's not with us today.
Okay, so we have then Selena, Mark, and Alex. Is that correct?
That's correct.
All right. So, Mark, how long have you been in the program?
I've been at Sunhawk for almost 8 months now.
All right.
A week shy of it.
All right. Well, we feel very fortunate that all of you are taking the time to talk with us. Now, I guess, before we go into that, and excuse me, I'm stammering a little bit because I'm getting feedback of my own voice. But, Davey, for our listeners out there that didn't hear the show before, tell us a little bit about Sunhawk, and then we'll go into some questions of our young people.
I'd be happy to. Thank you. And let me just say it's really, really good to be here, and we really appreciate the opportunity. And these three fine young people that are here are scared to death. And it's kind of funny because when they talk to people face-to-face, they're just calm as a summer's morning, but all of a sudden being here on the radio, they're scared to death. But let me tell you about Sunhawk. We are Sunhawk Adolescent Recovery Center, and we do just exactly what the name implies. We're all about recovery here. We work with adolescents who struggle with substance abuse and addiction, and we assist them in their recovery. And I choose those words carefully because it's not us that does that for them. It's them that work out their own recovery here. We are based in the 12 steps, as we see the 12 steps as a terrific method for self-discovery and to assist the kids in discovering themselves as spiritual beings who can use those 12 steps in the process of change throughout their lives. And we find that works very well for them in helping them see themselves differently and to use that process throughout their lives in that continual process of change.
Well, I know that you have what you call your 12 guiding principles. Tell us a little bit about those.
Well, the 12 guiding principles match those or are similar to those used in many of the 12-step programs around. And and it's important to differentiate that from AA and NA. Those are programs that we also use, but the 12-step program is not the same as Alcoholics Anonymous or Narcotics Anonymous. The 12 steps are a method that AA and NA and lots of other programs utilize. The 12 steps stand alone as a method, again, I choose that word carefully, as a method of self-discovery, a method of change, and a process of self-discovery that the kids use. So our values and our methods and our 12 guiding principles are those that are espoused by the 12 steps, and we hold to those very carefully. We work those steps intensively. The kids who complete the program here work through the first 5 steps. They don't complete those 5 steps necessarily, other than they work through them very deeply and very intensively as part of completing the program, and then they leave here and continue that process throughout their lives.
And how long is your program there?
The average length of stay here is about 6 to 8 months, and we find that that's necessary. That amount of time is necessary to really begin that process of true change. And for them to have the time to practice those principles and to practice those steps and incorporate them into their lives, and particularly in an intense social setting like they have here, that amount of time is necessary to really begin that true change process. You can't do that in 28 or 30 or 60 days.
All right. Well, let me ask or address the kids a little bit. And what I want to say is that we're going to be talking a little bit about, we're going to ask you some questions. I want you to feel very, very comfortable about it. I have sat right there in your conference room. I've talked with, again, not you in particular, but other young people that are in the program. And just pretend like that's what it is. We're just sitting there. We're in the conference room. Don't worry about anything else. And just feel free to open up and share with us. And think about the fact that you're sort of addressing more parents, okay? There's going to be more parents that are listening. There's going to be more professionals listening. But they may also want to bring their, their teenager to listen at a later date. So if you have a message that you want to get out, think about it from the standpoint of maybe how parents can, what they can do differently to maybe keep their young people from being able to become addicted to a foreign substance. Does that sound fair enough?
Yeah.
All right.
Yep. Sounds good.
Okay. Now, why don't we, and Davey, I don't know, you're going to need to sort of mediate a little bit, because obviously I'm not sitting in the conference room, so I can't look at each one and say, okay, let's start with you or whatever. So, Davey, if you can maybe mediate a little bit, and if we could get each one of the three of you just to tell us a little bit about your story, and then we'll ask you questions from there.
Well, sure, do that. Why don't we start with you, Alex? Just kind of give us a brief overview of your story and where you're at.
All right. Well, as you know, my name is Alex. I was originally born in Russia, and my biological mother was an alcoholic, which I found out years ago and never really blamed her because I was born with a dysfunctional ability in my leg and was only born with a femur and not the other bone. And that kind of, like, put me in a mode of, like, why was I born this way? Why was I having a disability? I mean, why didn't I not even have real parents? And, like, I found out because, like, my mother couldn't take care of me because she chose alcohol over me. And that put my life in a pause of, like, why? So, and it brought my self-esteem in a horrible front. So I was later adopted 4 years later by my I call dad. And he was a doctor, and he adopted me because he knew he could help my disability, and so I've had dozens of surgeries for my leg just to extend it, to fix it, and properly try to get it where it needs to be, and as I got into middle school, I was using Oxycontin to take the pain away, and I found out that, like, my friends are telling me, you know, the pills you're using, you that's trying to save your leg, is can actually be used for a high. And I thought about it, and I was like, really? I didn't know that could actually happen. So I started using the only pills that could actually save me from a horrible pain and actually make me, for somebody who I can actually, like, not care about what's happening. Because I've had myself being teased and called names every single time through school, like, calling me, like, and people even pushing me because they thought it would be funny because I was the only kid on crutches in the early years of my life. And that brought my eyes into a position of, like, why are people picking on me? So I chose Oxycontin to actually reveal that pain for me and, like, not really care what people think of me anymore, because I felt like once I was using that drug that it can actually bring me into a life of, like, normal in a way. And then as I moved into Oxycontin, I started going into my years of teenage years, and I moved into marijuana, and I just loved it so much in a way that I didn't know it was actually destroying my life. And then once that happened, 2 days after my surgery, I was so addicted into a rush. I was so wanting to have a rush in my life. I loved having a thrill. So I broke into a house, in my neighbor's house, and I don't know what I was looking for, but I knew I was doing it because my body was telling me, you need to do this because you know it's fun. So I was just doing anything I could, and I got in trouble because of myself, because they found crutch marks on the floor, and that's how I got in trouble, and that led me into a life of probation for 3 years, and which totally demolished my life. It brought my life into a depression. It brought my life into nothing but misery, and, like, I've been sent in and out of detention centers and rehabs. And then that's all I was used to, is being controlled. And I couldn't do that anymore. I was always controlled by my probation officer, by my dad telling me what to do. And that led my life of being so horrible that I needed something to cover that up. So I started stealing. So I started to be someone who I really wasn't. And I hid that from everybody. And I pretty much put a blanket over myself and was doing things because I wanted to do it, not because people were telling me what was right and wrong. It's because I was making my own laws for myself. And so that brought my life into a spiral until I hit rock bottom several times. And I didn't know what a rock bottom was.
all I knew was something for me was just going into detention centers depressed. And I thought that was normal for me. That's why I kept on going in and out and in and out. Until like I couldn't take anymore, my probation officer kept on seeing it. And she was like, what are you doing with your life? Why are you doing this with yourself? Why are you making the decisions that you don't even see because you're so blind from your stupidity? And that just made me horrible. And people told me this every single time. Everybody told me, you're an idiot. You're stupid. What are you doing? And then, like, I finally gave up, and I had a decision, should I stay 6 months in the detention center eating bologna and sandwiches or go into a rehab called Sunhawk? And of course, I chose Sunhawk because I mean, why would you be in a detention center for 6 months? And then that's how I started to grow so much more because like I've learned so much abilities that I've never discovered in my life, like about patience, about love, about who I really am, because I've always took different identities from other people. So once I've gotten into Sunhawk, I learned that I can actually get my trust back from my dad. I can do things on my own, and I've learned that people actually started saying, wow, you're a really good person. Wow, you're a really good kid. Look what you're doing. And I was so scared because I was not used to those kind of words. I was not used to being called nice. I wasn't used to be calling good things to me. And that put me in a shock in a way because I wasn't used to that kind of thing. I really wasn't. So once I started growing into this kind of mood, I was like, wow, I guess I really am a good person for the things I really am doing. And that put my eyes in thought. Like, it made me be the kind of person I am today I would never even think of 3 years ago. And that's my story.
Wow, that's incredible, yeah. Alex. It takes a lot of courage and strength to go into a program. And being in the detention center, you'd been there, done that, and then you decided, let me try something new. I have a question, though. You said you were doing a lot of things because you love the high and the thrill of it. So being at Sunhawk, what have you learned about yourself that gets you high and excited now without the use of drugs?
Motivation, definitely. Because like once people actually saw me doing good things and telling me, hey, you're actually doing something right, that's what led me, hey, if they think I'm already doing something good, why not keep doing it, you know? That's why I kept on doing it, because I love helping people. I've done that through community service every single time. I've helped mentally disabled kids. I've helped little kids. And that's what I love doing. I love to help people. And that's what brought me to where I am, because I've always helped people. And people saw that in me. So that's what brought me to where I am, was helping people and getting that kind of motivation.
Well, Alex, thank you for being so candid. And this is really what we were hoping for, is just, you know, someone who's going to be able to feel comfortable telling their story. And I think it's something that's going to be able to help other kids, and it's going to help other families. It's going to help other parents that might be able to hear something that you're saying and think, well, wait a minute, am I doing that with my child? So again, thank you so much. Selena, could you tell us a little bit about kind of what brought you to this point, and just tell us your name and your age, and then just a little bit about your situation?
I'm Selena. I'm 16. When I was little, like I knew what drugs were at a very young age because my dad was a drug dealer. I always promised myself that I would never, ever do drugs, and I despised people that did drugs. And growing up, my dad was in and out of prison my whole life. And, like, I don't know, I've been through a lot of things. Like, I have really bad trust issues. When I was 9 years old, we lived in an apartment, and my family lived in an apartment in, like, El Centro, California, and my aunt had lived with us, too. And her boyfriend, that was also a drug dealer and did drugs, he broke into our house in the middle of the night because he was angry because she broke up with him. And he shot my aunt in my house. And ever since then, well, he threatened to kill my mom, too, and me and my cousin. And ever since then, I don't know, I had a really hard time trusting people. I never felt safe. I never felt comfortable or anything like that. I always felt insecure in some ways. And like I said, my dad was in and out of prison. When I was nine, he went to prison for 2.5 years. He got out. He was out for a year. And when I was in, like 4 years ago, he got sent to prison again. He just recently got out a month ago. But when I was 12, my mom had got a new boyfriend, and I didn't really like him that much because I felt jealous because he was getting attention from my mom and the attention that I wanted. And so I was like, I don't know, I kind of decided to rebel against my parents and do things, I guess, for attention from my mom, because I knew if I did something bad, then she would pay attention to me, and I don't know what I was looking for. But I started smoking marijuana when I was 14. It was more like for acceptance for people, because I never felt comfortable. I always wanted more, and like I wanted to hang out with people that had fun, and people that did drugs looked like they were having fun. So I started hanging out with the wrong crowd, I guess, and I fell into peer pressure, because like I said I would never do drugs, but then they wanted me to do drugs so bad, so finally I just did them, because I was an angry person at that time. Started doing drugs, and like Alex said, I had reconstructive surgery on my knee because I injured it in softball, and I got prescribed pain medication, and then I started taking that even when I didn't need it. And I was 14 years old, and I would get refills, and my mom had no idea what I was doing. And from there, my addiction went quick. Like, I went to cocaine and ecstasy. And then for me, I had a lot of insecurities, like I said, especially about my body, and that's what mainly drove me to drugs, like ecstasy and cocaine. And I felt like I had, like, eating disorder, I guess you would say, like, I hated my body. I hated the way I looked, and I always wanted to be skinnier than I was. And so when I was 15, I started smoking crystal meth, and I only did it for like a month, and then I said I didn't want to do it anymore because I realized the person I had become, and I didn't like it. And then I quit for like a couple months, but then insecurities came back. And so it just drove me back to it, and then I just started doing it all the time. And then my parents found out that I was doing it, and my mom got really scared. And she would always tell me that she was scared for my life, and I don't even know, I did some really crazy things. And so finally one day my mom just came out and said that she was going to send me away.
Wow.
I didn't like it at first, but I'm really grateful that she did send me away.
And then with your experience there, I have a listener question that they emailed to me, Selena, and maybe you could answer this for me and maybe mm-hmm. give us some insight. A parent emailed in, I have a 15-year-old daughter who really, really likes a 16-year-old boy but stated that he's addicted to ecstasy. And the girl denies mm-hmm.
using it
but wants to help him. Now, if the boy is really addicted, is it possible for her to help him before he gets her to start using too? I mean, what do you think if there was a boy in your life that tried to help you stop? Do you think he would have been able to help
you? I think that's a very bad idea, even though she has really good intentions. But it's like people that are using, like when I was using, my friend Jesse had tried to get me to stop so many times. And it's like, I loved and cared about him, but I love the drugs more. Especially if you're addicted, you're going to choose a drug over anybody. If you choose the drugs over your family or anything. So I feel like if she really, I don't know, that's a really hard spot. If she really cares, she would want to help him. But if she really cares about herself, she wouldn't put herself in that situation.
Okay. Well, hopefully the parents will let her listen to this show and hear what you had to say, because I think it's really important to know it's really hard to stop somebody else who wants to use drugs, which I think is what you're telling us here today. And let me ask you, where do you find your drugs?
Well, this is a really crazy question. My brother, who used to live with me, used to sell drugs, and he lived in my house, so I would just go to his room and take them. And because he had a lot of drugs, so it was really easily accessible for me. And I started hanging out with my brother's friends because, like, my brother has a reputation of like a drug dealer, you know. And so I would start hanging out with his friends, and his friends would kind of hold me up to my brother's, like, reputation. And they would also give me drugs, too, for free sometimes, or really cheap.
Wow. So it was easy access for you. And then,
yeah.
Well, I know I was going to say, and how about the rest of you? Is it the type of thing now? And I noticed the common thing was prescription drugs. You know, both you and Alex were able to have pretty easy access to prescription drugs. And that's a whole nother topic now that's becoming a huge issue. But what about just most any type of drugs? Is it that easy to get them still as far as high school?
Definitely. I would say marijuana is the most easily accessible, but there's many ways to find other drugs in every public high school, I think. Any public schools, anything.
All right. Well, Selena, thank you. And again, we appreciate how candid you're being. Mark, can you give us your age and tell us a little bit about what brought you to this point?
All right, I'm Mark. I'm 17 years old. I was born in Hungary. I was adopted when I was a little bit almost four. My birth mom was a heroin addict, and she had a decision either to kill me and still stay alive, or she could have killed herself and I would live, and she decided to have me instead. So she died too after giving birth to me. My dad, he was never really there. Ever since she was pregnant, he just left. So I was in a foster home for almost 4 years before I got adopted, and I had had an alcoholic stepfather and a mom that was just overcaring. So from a young age, I kind of got used to what addiction was and just what anger was, because my mom, now who adopted me, told me that when she did visit, that my foster mom would have, like, black eyes, or seemed like every time she would try hugging me, I would act really fearful and act like if she was going to hit me. So she just had, the whole environment is pretty just negative and violent. So when I came to the States, and I had a pretty good life for the most part. It's pretty simple. By 9, though, that's when my anger started coming out, because I got molested by my friend's dad. And that kind of sparked off my anger, which led me to get on probation, because I was doing a bunch of petty little stuff, doing, like, setting fires, getting in fights in school, destruction of property, just petty little things that little kids do. And it finally kind of caught up to me and said, all right, you know, we're done with you, and we're going to be on probation. And with being on probation, I got angry one day at my mom, and I put a plastic bag over her head when I was 9. I didn't really try killing her. I was just angry. I didn't really know what I was doing. And that led me to go on my meds I got put on. I was on, like, 5 meds, like Depakote, lithium, Risperdal, Seroquel, and one other one I can't remember. So for most of my life, I was pretty much going kind of like an allergy. I was getting arrested a lot. I was getting hospitalized, and that was all pretty much over my anger. My meds didn't do anything. It's got me more angry, more violent. Kept on telling my psychiatrist this, but he was just kind of pretty much boosting up my dose, getting me over to 1,000 milligrams. I was just saying, it's not helping me at all. So I got to a point by 8th grade that I met one of my friends who I'm not really friends with at this point because of treatment, but he said, if your meds aren't helping you, why don't you just start smoking weed? And I didn't ever even think about stop taking my meds. It was just so bizarre to me. I was like, that's a good point. If they're not helping me, why don't I do something different? And he's just like, weed makes you calm. You won't be angry anymore. You could be normal. You could be happy. Because I always had this great anger, and I just never felt happy. I was either pissed off all the time or just blah. I was never that good normal medium. So I started smoking weed, and I loved it from the first start. I was just one of those people who just got hooked quick. Like, there was no gradual build for me. I was just like, I want this as much as I can every single day. And then it led me down the road to getting the stuff that I got into with my friends who I have now, that started getting into selling stuff because I wanted to get more drugs because they were doing ecstasy, so I wanted to try ecstasy. Then they got introduced to PCP. And that was like my heroin. That was when everything got black for me. That's when my violence and rage came out. That's when I pretty much was killing myself emotionally and spiritually. I was just, I was either you met me as a zombie, and if I wasn't a zombie, I was just someone in a great rage. So I started selling. I sold a couple of drugs. I don't know if it's necessary to say what drugs, but I sold a couple of drugs. Got into a lot of fights. Got myself initiated in a gang. Started doing all this stupid nonsense over, I don't even know, honestly. And I started giving, I'm a musician, and I gave up my music for it, and that's my life goal right now. That's what I thank treatment for. It got me back on the right page, and I could go back to my music, because that's my life right then. I gave that up. I gave sports up. I gave everything in my life up for drugs.
Well,
go ahead. My bad. So that was just, that was pretty much my downfall, and I was a heavy drinker as well, so I was blacking out a lot. My doctor actually told me I was smoking 4 packs a day, and obviously on top of PCP and drinking, my lungs were actually, he said another solid year, and I was going to get a light case of emphysema, and that still didn't stop me. I was just like, well, I better get as high as I can for this year then. So that's pretty much all I guess I have to say, kind of blanking out on my life. Sorry about that, but...
Well, Mark, again, thank you. Thank you for sharing with us. I want to say a couple of things. One is there was a listener that was just calling in. I wasn't able to catch it in time. Feel free to call right back. I will try to get you on the air. Davey, one of the common denominators that I was picking up as I was listening to these young people is there was a connection to prescription drugs in each situation. Can you share a little bit about that for our listeners as to kind of how long this has been growing as a problem and where it stands now?
Well, they're probably the experts in it, but prescription drug abuse has grown and grown and grown, and I think one of the reasons for that is the easy access to it. I think each of them have mentioned how oftentimes they come about it through their own medical problems, injuries, things like that, but oftentimes they come about it through their own parents' medicine cabinets. They can find it in their parents' medicine chest, that it seems to be right there, or they can get it at school because their schoolmates, their peers got it from their parents' medicine cabinets. It's also readily available across the border and pretty easy to come by. And so I think the availability of it is a key factor in that, and it's very potent. OxyContin and some of the other prescription painkillers, opiates that are out there are very, very powerful chemicals. And my personal opinion, that's also borne out professionally, is that there's a lot of pain in our society right now. There's a lot of pain with our children. And there's not a lot of resources that the kids are finding to deal with the pain in their lives. Their parents' generation has not been taught how to deal with pain. And the message has been given to them to just make the pain go away. And if they don't have other resources to just make the pain go away, they turn to drugs. And well, that's what painkillers are. It kills the pain.
Exactly.
They don't know what to do with the pain, then they just kill it. They make it go away.
All right. Well, I've got a question for all three of our young people, and Davey, if you can sort of moderate this, because they'll probably look to you and shake their head if they have an answer for this, but maybe each one does. I mean, what is the main thing that you would want to tell a parent who believes that their child is starting to get involved with drugs? What is the one thing that maybe you wish your parents would have done differently, or the one thing that you would tell them that they can do that will hopefully keep them from getting more involved in drugs?
So what I got to tell you right off the bat is that the kids have a system here of saying when they want to respond, and each of the kids here held up a finger. They go 1, 2, and 3, and whoever wants to speak first holds up a 1, the next kid holds up a 2, and the next kid holds up a 3. I got a 1, 2, and 3 right here. So, Alex, you held up your finger first.
What I have to say is, like, some parents are so confused, and, like, they, like, what my dad did, well, he pretty much was trying to be on my side, and he was always like, he never confronted me like, hey, are you doing drugs? He was mostly just like, okay, he knew, and he kind of just ignored it. And like, what I want to say is like, don't ignore it. The best thing to do, because like, what I finally learned here is like, parents need to come up to it in a more like broad way, more assertive way. Don't come up to him and just be like, hey, sweet, are you using drugs, in a more like questioning way. Come up to them and more like, are you using drugs? Because we really do need to talk about it. And if you need help, we will help you. And like, come up into it in a more nice and abrupt way, like you like lending a hand. Because that's what parents love doing, but they just don't know how to do it in a correct way. So that's what I would have to say. Just come up in a more assertive way, saying if you need drugs. And if they do say no, then go talk to them if they'll see a therapist, because usually that's what I did. Like, if I didn't want to tell my parents anything, then a therapist would be the perfect person to talk to, because that's where you keep their secrets with each other, because you gain a really strong connection with you and your therapist, and that's what I did. I gained a very strong connection with my therapist, and therapists help you a lot. I'm telling you, they help you so much. Like, it's amazing how much therapists and parents have a disconnection from each other, because like, therapists have a lot of knowledge in them, and parents are like, because they're not used to having like kids who are just jumping into the like drug era, they're not used to that at all. But therapists, they deal with that every single day with other kids, and that's what I would have to say.
All right, well, Alex, thank you. And before the second person starts, we've probably got about 7 minutes or so. So one of the questions that I have that maybe one of you can touch on as well, as Alex was saying, that is that, do you feel that it is a violation of trust with your parent when they ask you to take a drug test?
So address both of those things, if you would, Mark.
All right. To answer your first question, I think being a buddy-buddy is not helpful at all to the kid. I know my mom, she wasn't a buddy-buddy, but she was really lenient with me. She was like, well, if you're just going to smoke weed in the house, or you're just going to drink in the house, or I could just get you cigarettes whenever you need them. It was kind of like, it didn't seem any impact on me to stop using. It was kind of like, why would I stop when everything's at my feet right now? But another thing, too, like, don't be shady about things either if you're a parent. Like, don't be going behind the kid's back. Be up front. Be like, first off, have a discussion. Are you using drugs? And if they are using drugs, don't be like, well, you're grounded if you get high again. Be like, why are you using drugs? What is wrong? What is going on with you? Because I had so much hurt in my life, I just didn't know it. I didn't have anyone to talk to. So instead of, like, you know, having my mom be there and be like, you know, I want to talk to you. I want to find out, you know, what's really bothering you, it was always rules or just the other way of complete freedom. So I think just being up front, trying to figure the things out with your kid, and then finding out what do they want. Because, I mean, parents always try to help, but they don't think of, maybe my kid wants something I'm not asking him for or her for. So just being like, you know, maybe I want a therapist. Maybe I want you to come home more instead of being at work. Maybe I want you to not hit me. Maybe I want you, whatever the case may be, maybe it's something that you're doing or not doing, and it could be just fixed with a light of a switch. Mm-hmm. You feel me? And then with the urine test, I think that's like the next step. If you're having the discussion but they're just closed off, they'd be like, no, F you, I don't want to do it, or I'm not going to do this, or, you know, I'm still going to get high. That's when you got to lay down the law and be like, you know what? If you're going to live in my house, I think it is right to have a urine test. Because I know that's what I had to do. And I think it keeps some sanity in the house, because even though it's not good to know your kid's using, at least then you know what they're using with the test. Be like, all right, well, you could bring it to a physician, like, this, my son, daughter's using meth, what should I do? Or they're using heroin, what should I do? And then it's being kept in the dark. So I think if you're going to make the decision as a kid to use, then I think you're going to have consequences coming with the using, too. It's not just going to be all fun and games and then find out, oh, I'm dead. So I think definitely it's a big part on parents' part. If they do the first step and then it's still not working, then lay down that law.
So basically what I hear you guys saying is that it's important for parents to step up and be parents and not be afraid to have your kids angry at you because you're having them drug tested or you put down the rules of the household.
Definitely.
And
yep.
Selena?
Well, I'll answer the drug test question first. I think that it's not a violation of trust if your parents drug test you, because if you're clean, then you then there shouldn't be a problem if you're getting drug tested. But if you're using, like me, whenever I was using, I would tell my mom that I was clean, even though I wasn't, and I would swear on it, even though I wasn't. So I feel like maybe if she would have drug tested me anyways, it could have, like, stopped me before or something like that. So I feel like parents should just, like Mark said, just go ahead and do it.
All right. Well, go ahead.
And I was going to say the one thing that I wish my mom would have done, I wish she would have talked to me about drugs. Honestly, like, I knew what drugs were just because of my dad and, like, my family. But I didn't know what they would do to you. I didn't know how fast you can get addicted to them. I didn't know where they could take you. Like, I heard stories, but I never thought it could happen to me. And I didn't know. I thought it only happened. I thought it happened only a certain type of people. And, like, I didn't know anything like that. And I don't know. I just wish my mom would have talked to me about it.
Okay. Well, thank you. I think that's something that everybody needs to hear. I have a question for Davey, and I was curious, what is the follow-up for continued support for the teens once they return home?
That's always the key, and I wish that there was more that we had that we could do. We do a lot of follow-up with the kids in terms of them writing in terms of them calling in and trying to stay in touch with us. We've got a number of initiatives that we're trying to put together. Fortunately, there are programs that we have agreements with and that we're trying to get more agreements with. Because we take kids from all over the country and even outside of the country, it's very difficult to have arrangements with programs all over the country to know what we can do to hook them up with certain programs out there. We have a tremendous effort in transitional planning. We have workshops for transitional planning with the parents to make sure that there are outpatient programs in place for the kids and step-down programs and things like that. But the aftercare piece, unfortunately, we don't provide directly, but we do make great efforts to make sure that the aftercare is in place before the kids leave here.
All right, Davey, let me interject for a little bit because we're just about out of time. If anybody has any additional questions for Davey or you want to learn more about Sunhawk, you can go to their website at www.sunhawkrecovery.com. That's SunhawkRecovery.com. If you're driving and you can't take that down, you can always go to our site at answers4thefamilyblog.com. If you give us the question, we will get it to Davey or to Sunhawk. Or if you have any other information that you want in regards to making a suggestion for the show, go to that site and we'll have somebody get right back with you. We've only got about a minute. If I could ask each one of our three special guests, if there was one thing that you wanted to say to teenagers out there and you had about 10 seconds to say it, if each one of you could give us something that's just what they really need to think about before doing drugs.
10 seconds, Mark. Selena?
I would just say don't change yourself for anybody, especially girls. We're changing for a boy. It's not worth it. That's all.
Great. Alex? I would say if you have one certain goal, keep it. And don't say you can't because you know you can. You're just ignoring it. So I would just say do it because you know you can do it.
Mark, judgment will cause a lot more problems than fun.
Excellent.
You guys are great.
You are wonderful. Thank you so much for taking the time. I wish we had more time. Davey, you were great again. I look forward to the opportunity to talk to you again. And the same thing. Any of you young people, when it comes time and you're moving on, if you want to come in, you want to call in and let us know how things have gone, we would love to hear about it. And until next week, everybody, seek to catch someone doing something good every day. Thank you.
Thanks, you guys.
Thank you.
Listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza. Only on LA Talk Radio.